146, where you can make judgment on capital construction that we need to have, 8:30 AM.
I think we'll be brief, so I'll be gone for a short time.
Okay, well, Senator Hume might be back in, and Subcommittee will come to order. We are actually in recess from Saturday, so we're in a continuing meeting mode here. And I want to start with House Bill 2282 relating to forfeiture, and I believe the Attorney General is here to testify on that. So, Mr. Frommeyer?
Hello, Bill, how are you?
A little dangerous coming in.
Oops, that's the original.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, we appreciate the chance to appear before you. I'm Dave Frommeyer, Attorney General, representing the Department of Justice and a very broad coalition of groups that have come together for this to back this legislation. I'm accompanied, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, by Assistant Attorney General Pete Shepard, who is an acknowledged expert on forfeiture legislation and forfeiture issues, indeed, in the United States of America. This measure has come before you, having been the subject of exhaustive bipartisan work by more than two interim committees of the Oregon Legislature, and countless hours of consideration by subcommittees and committees in both the House and the Senate. There is no partisan politics in this bill, Mr. Chairman. It's bipartisan. Forfeiture legislation was part of the party planks during the last election of both political parties. Citizens for Drug-Free Oregon, which has strongly supported this, is a bipartisan group. In addition to that, the Oregon District Attorneys Association, the Oregon State Police, the Chiefs of Police, the Peace Officers Association, Citizens for Drug-Free Oregon, League of Oregon Cities, Oregon Bankers Association, and other financial groups strongly support the protections and considerations of this measure. I support the measure, as does Governor Goldschmidt support forfeiture in concept. This is the single most important anti-drug effort that this legislature could enact this session. I make that statement unequivocally, and it's the same statement that I and others have made before, particularly considering the precarious nature at the moment of the forfeiture remedy due to an unfortunate decision in the Oregon Court of Appeals and an even more unfortunate decision by the Congress last session, which we will remedy if the voters pass, as I believe they will tomorrow, HGR 3, which is the implementing constitutional amendment that will allow this comprehensive statewide forfeiture measure with its guidelines to be enacted. Mr. Chairman, let me only raise three issues because I believe the committee is broadly familiar with, and I certainly hope supportive of this measure. The first relates to staff for the Oversight Committee. I don't wish to entangle any concern about the availability of my office to do this if the legislature finds another mode of providing that staff. I have simply made available to the Senate committee my acknowledgement that my office will staff the Oversight Committee should such staff be needed. If this committee wishes to indicate or ask some other source to do the staffing, that is certainly the legislature's prerogative, and it constitutes no slur or slap at my office. Second, there has been some concern in the past about the availability of funds from forfeiture for methamphetamine lab or other clandestine lab cleanup. Regrettably, there are certain federal restrictions on the use of forfeited funds which make the bulk use of that kind of remedy one that would cause Oregon to lose the remedy of forfeited funds altogether. It certainly is a worthy, laudable goal. If you wish more information on that subject, Assistant Attorney General Shepard can provide that to you. But it is for that reason that the use of these funds for any cleanup purposes is carefully limited by measure. And it will go primarily into law enforcement budgets or into the special fund, which was essentially an idea developed by the governor and others, that will assist law enforcement purposes and perhaps even could be used for drug treatment and prevention. One final point, and obviously relevant to the jurisdiction of this committee, and that is that, as you may know, there is not a single dollar of general fund money that goes currently to state police anti-narcotics efforts. And that's why the passage of this measure is absolutely critical, because any state police effort to be effective on a statewide basis, as it must be, needs obviously a minimum kind of seed funding. We know that the state police have been highly successful in forfeitures, particularly on Interstate 5, particularly in southern Oregon. The measure's been carefully tailored so that this, no one, I think, can in good faith make a bounty hunting argument, because after a certain level of funds have been received, they pour over into a more general fund at the disposition of this legislature, but at least they provide the minimum seed money that the state police needs for its effort.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hill?
Question of the Attorney General at that point.
Dave, yes.
where in the bill does it describe that over?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, it'd be Section 11, A, B, and C.
So it goes, the money from the forfeiture goes into law enforcement, anti-narcotics efforts, up to a point, and then cascades into another pot.
That's correct. Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, that accurately describes the distribution to state law enforcement agencies. The formulas for distribution to cities and counties are a little bit different, but with respect to state law enforcement agencies, that's absolutely correct.
We were discussing on Friday the possible usage of some forfeiture proceeds to clean up drug-contaminated properties or to assist in that cleanup. This money currently is pegged to go to the Common School Fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, it would go to the Common School Fund unless HJR 3 passes tomorrow, or a portion of it at least would go to the Common School Fund.
I see.
If HJR 3 passes tomorrow, then the money would be distributed as the Attorney General has described with the pour over fund. It does not dedicate any sum to meth lab cleanup.
And Pete, can you explain for the committee and for the record why that is the case? That's a deliberate choice made upon the necessity to conform to federal law.
That is correct. The same change that necessitated HJR 3 in federal law would operate to prevent Oregon from participating in federal equitable sharing forfeiture revenues if the legislature were to mandate that the funds were to go to a non-law enforcement purpose, to wit, cleaning up meth labs.
Mr. Chairman, one more question. Since we can't dedicate those particular funds to law or law enforcement purposes, what if we channeled some of those funds to the Health Division to assist contractors to come prepared to clean up these properties?
Mr. Chair,
a private activity.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, the federal language is that the federal government may not transfer forfeited property if doing so would, quote, circumvent any requirement of state law that prohibits forfeiture or limits use or disposition of property forfeited to state or local agencies. And then the federal, the Attorney General's guidelines provide that the money may only be transferred if it would be used by the local jurisdiction to increase law enforcement resources. So that if any portion of the money were mandated to go to contractors who would be cleaning up these sites, for example, it would appear to me to violate those federal requirements and make us ineligible for federal forfeiture revenues.
Even if those contractors were acting pursuant to a private contract with the owner of the property, not under any mandate or any law enforcement oversight?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, yes, I believe that's correct, because the expenditure of that money would not increase law enforcement resources.
Okay. I'd just like to personally express my appreciation to the Attorney General and his staff, Mr. Shepherd especially. I chaired the joint interim subcommittee on this issue and put together that task, or at least one of those groups that worked on it, and it was a tremendous amount of work that went into it. Mr. Shepherd did a lot of work in bringing that around. I appreciate the efforts that you did, and you personally, Mr. Attorney General, on the bill. Senator Bradbury.
Just a couple questions, which are more policy than financial, but
okay, we'll allow a couple. I think probably Representative Hanlon, so he was one of the two on this that voted against. We'll probably have a question.
As I understand the bill, it supersedes any local forfeiture ordinance related to the activities that this would be the forfeiture ordinance for the state of Oregon.
That's
right.
Wouldn't
be, you'd have 33 counties doing different systems.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the other question I have is just in terms of the forfeiture process, I need to understand what can get you to forfeiting your property, and whether or not you have to be convicted of any crime to have property forfeited, or whether it's just forfeiture without conviction. And I need to understand that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bradbury, one does not need to be convicted of a crime in order to have one's property subjected to forfeiture under the bill. That's not to say that the government doesn't have to prove anything in order to achieve a forfeiture. and the things that the government generally has to prove are stated in Section 3 of the bill on pages 3 and 4. And that Section 3 is a list of the kinds of property which will be subjected to forfeiture under the bill.
As I read that list, it's a very comprehensive list that includes all real property used to commit or facilitate in any manner the commission of the prohibited conduct.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bradbury, that's correct, and you're correct in reading it as being very broad language. It's modeled on a federal statute, 21 U.S.C. Section 881, which has been very effective in the federal system. That particular language regarding real property received the close scrutiny of the House Judiciary Committee, and it was partly in response to the breadth of the remedy that the Oversight Committee that the Attorney General has referred to was created. And the explicit intent of that committee is to review the performance under the bill and see that we in the law enforcement community are exercising our discretion appropriately, given the broad remedy that we're granted under the bill.
And that was the first part, but what's subject to forfeiture? The second part is, how do you get your property forfeited?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bradbury, broadly there are two mechanisms for forfeiture under the bill, again modeled in general after the federal law. The first is what might be described as an administrative process, in which the police, which has probable cause to believe that the property is within the categories described in Section 3, seizes the property and then provides notice to the every person known to have an interest, which is a very broad category of people under the bill. If there's no contest, and in the federal system about 80% of the cases are not contested, if there's no contest, then the law enforcement agency may apply to a court for a judgment of forfeiture. If there is a contest, and that's raised by a person filing a claim, if there is such a contest, then the matter becomes a judicial case, which would require the filing of a complaint against the property in the appropriate court, and then judicial proceedings from that stage.
What's the standard of proof used in the judicial proceeding?
There is a shifting burden of proof, Senator. The government must establish probable cause to believe that the property is subject to forfeiture. Once the government has met that burden, then the person who claims that the property should not be forfeited must demonstrate that the property is not subject to forfeiture, for either because there is not probable cause to believe it's within the category described in Section 3, or because one of the affirmative defenses that are described in the bill cover that property.
So, if you want to convict someone, you have to do it beyond a reasonable doubt. But under this ordinance, you could take—I'm just trying to walk through this. You could take their property if you had probable cause.
And proved by the preponderance of the evidence in the proceeding itself. Probable cause gives you the right to institute the proceeding. You still have to meet the ordinary civil jury or civil standard of preponderance of the evidence.
Yeah, I understand that, and I don't mean to get, this is really, I apologize.
Sorry.
This is really a policy. I have a real fundamental struggle in my own heart over these kind of issues, and I've had it for a long time, and I just am trying to map out. You know, it seems to me we're creating a situation where I know it's important to deal with this problem, but it just seems to me we create a situation where you have a whole different series of standards of proof. Someone may end up not being convicted for doing something illegal, and yet they're still treated as a criminal.
Mr. Chair,
I mean, their property. They're not. Their property is. I mean, it's just it's a tough one for me.
You
want
to respond to that?
Well, it is, if it's any solace, Senator Bradbury, this is not new.
I know that.
The forfeiture remedy against the property is a centuries-old device. It is a civil remedy. It is not a criminal proceeding. And there are many cases in which it is a more complete and more appropriate remedy than a long, expensive criminal prosecution. This is certainly our experience in administering the RICO law. There has been no adverse court decision to Oregon's experience in using the RICO law. It is somewhat more cumbersome because you need to prove the two predicate offenses by a preponderance of the evidence. And that's why this is really a superior remedy and probably if I were speaking in a self-serving way, will hurt the revenue of the Department of Justice. But a quick, efficient, appropriate remedy is desirable. One final point, and I don't wish to protract the hearing on this, but you did, Senator Bradbury, raise the question that the Senate Judiciary and others directly confronted. That is, should you cause a person to forfeit a whole acreage of property if only a small portion of it is used for an illegal purpose? And I think the answer is one that, or at least is illustrated. The appropriateness of the answer of this bill is illustrated by an issue that occurred either in Representative Hanneman's or Representative Hanneman's district. That is, a meth lab operator associated with an outlaw motorcycle gang created enormous profits with developing the product on the property. The meth lab, of course, took up only a small part of the property. If you just forfeited the amount of the property that was used for committing the illegal act, you'd be forfeiting contaminated, unsaleable property to the state. And not only that, you'd be creating enormous problems of title for the title insurance industry, for the banking industry. You know, if it's a landlocked parcel where the little marijuana patch is, then you're going to have to worry about how you get an easement to the property. And so ultimately, the issue does rest, I think, in the discretion appropriately considered of the civil authorities, with the guarantee at least that you have oversight and the knowledge by law enforcement and prosecutors that if they overreach, you're going to take this remedy away from them. And I think that with that much sunshine on the subject, I don't think you're going to see the abuses that would concern people.
Okay. Representative? This came out of Senate Judiciary. It has didn't come directly down here, didn't go to the floor.
Yes, that's correct.
What was the vote in the Senate Judiciary?
I believe it was unanimous.
Unanimous there. I know one of the things that, relating to this, it does give us a single focus. We right now have a number of different forfeiture laws in various jurisdictions, and it was to some extent the at the request of local jurisdictions that this bill was brought to us so that we'd have a statewide standard. Representative Hanlon, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I have no monetary questions relating to this bill.
You're allowed one policy question.
And
actually two. Senator Bradbury had two. So
out of respect for the chair and for the proponents of this bill, if needed, I'll vote aye. Otherwise, I will try to keep my record consistent.
I appreciate that. We'll make certain that your call lasts. Is there any just further comments here? I think Mr. Attorney General, and Keith, appreciate your coming over here and testifying on this. Ron, I want to make a comment on the record here also, and then anybody else. I don't know if executive want to make any. Mr. Ron.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Frank Bonner with the Oregon Bankers Association. Obviously, with 363 bank robberies last year in Oregon, 95% of them drug-related. Obviously, we are now reporting cash transactions above $3,000, one of those areas singled out for that honor. And with drug houses that we have mortgages on and so forth, we have a great deal of interest in this bill. This is an extremely important bill to pass. I've called to your attention and for the record, and Senator Bradbury came very close to the point that I wanted to make on the record. This forfeiture procedure preempts local ordinances and will provide a standard process throughout the state. It is intended to allow local jurisdictions to adopt ordinances specifying other prohibited conduct and to provide for forfeiture. But should they do that, it will be this process that is intended to be used. I'd respond to any questions, Mr. Chair.
I have a question.
Senator Hill.
Frank, you've worked on the bill along with the Attorney General and others. Have the counties and cities who would be preempted agreed that this is a satisfactory alternative to a local ordinance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, yes, they have. They've been a part of the process all the way through, and it's taken a long time, but it's been a good working group, and I think everyone has signed off on it.
Thank you very much. Is there any other discussion or anyone else that wants to make a presentation on this? If not, the bill basically, Mr. Stenson, is before us because previously there was some question about the distribution of monies and one thing or other, but that's now, I guess, been dealt with. So.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2282 to the full committee. Due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill moves House Bill 2282 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion? do you have anything you want to say for the good of the order?
Mr. Chairman, only for the record, a statement was made that no general fund monies are used for the state police in drug enforcement. For the record, a vast majority of their drug buy funds comes from this source, but the salaries of the officers who are involved in the drug enforcement activity are paid for out of the general fund.
Oh, okay. Okay, fine. No further discussion on the measure. The clerk call roll. Calling Representative Hanlon last, if you will.
Senator Hill?
Aye.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Burke?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. We go to, Mr. Chairman. I'd be glad to carry that on the Senate side.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Hill, carry that on the Senate side. And
I assumed you wanted to, Ms. Chair, but I'd be happy to if you don't.
That's fine. Why don't you carry it?
Thank you.
So we'll have the someone sitting on the. This is a very technical bill. Some questions come up here. Let's go to House Bill 2318, relating to special education. I think there's some people here for this one. Are you in the chair on this?
Yes.
Get a lot of exercises.
Yes. I'm halfway through.
Yeah, for this weekend. Okay, do we have anybody?
Yes, these folks here.
Are you here for this? Come on up. Okay. Tell us about this and where are we doing this?
Mr. Chair, my name is Cindy Becker from the Mental Health Division. House Bill 2318 transfers the responsibility for education of students who reside at Fairview under the age of 21 from Fairview to the Department of Education. This is in line with the United States Department of Justice consent decree, which mandates that Fairview no longer, after June of 1990, that we no longer have children at Fairview. As part of our community integration project, we will be relocating the remaining, I think it's about 37 children from Fairview. But after that time, we know there may be some children that on occasion do get admitted from short term. And if that happens, what this bill would require is the Department of Education will have to arrange for the education of those children.
That's basically the end of the bill.
My name is Patricia Bresch. I'm with the Oregon Department of Education, responsible for TMR services. And again, I am here just saying basically the same thing that Ms. Becker has just mentioned to you, that the department would view Fairview Training Center as one of the hospital programs, and we would contract with a local district to provide educational services to those students that are placed at Fairview on an interim basis.
Okay, Kay, why do we have this?
Mr. Chairman, I believe you have it as simply because the co-chairs have assigned it to this committee.
No, I mean, why is it? Why? They can do anything they want. I'm just trying to figure out, do we have a financial impact?
Yes. I'm sorry.
I know why bills get to the committee, but
I would have gone to the analyst.
Do it.
It's a transfer of funds from one to the other.
Exactly.
Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly. And we have some proposed amendments to do in this bill to take care of that.
All right. Is there any, before we get to that then, are there questions about the substantive aspect of this bill?
Let Senator Hill clarify, this is a shifting of responsibility. It's not a shifting of actually who's teaching. Or exactly what does it mean for the kids? Are they going to be moved someplace for education or what?
Senator Hill, it'll be the responsibility of the department to decide how that education will take place. For example, if a child is only there for a few weeks, it doesn't make sense to enroll them in a local school district. For those situations, the department would probably hire an instructional aide or a home aide to go out to Fairview for the duration of the time that the child is there. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on the circumstances for the individual child. Fairview will not have a teaching staff because there will not be children at Fairview for that purpose. Mm-hmm. But on a short-term basis, department would probably send in some staff.
Will this result in staff reductions at Fairview?
Right here.
Are there going to be layoffs or something?
Well, as part of the community integration project and through the United States DOJ consent decree, Part of that is that children will not be there for education purposes after June 1990, so part of the Fairview Reduction Plan does already include some reduction in, well, mostly a reduction in the teaching force already that really has nothing to do with this bill. That's part of the DOJ consent decree.
I see. So it's tied in with that?
Yes.
No other questions?
Hanlon? Hanlon?
We've we've got not only, you're not only negotiating with the U.S. Department of Justice, but you're also negotiating with health care, financing, whatever.
Right, administration.
And it seems to me sometimes they compete with each other on what they want of the state. Is this also required by the Health Care Financing Administration of the federal government?
Representative Hanlon, no, it's not. They do not set limits on the ages that you serve in Fairview or in an ICFMR, but this is was one of the big components of our consent decree with Department of Justice.
Okay. Senator Hill, another question. With the downsizing of Fairview, there's centers being planned to take some of the Fairview people in the local community. Does the definition of state-operated hospital include those centers or just Fairview itself?
Senator Hill, it's our understanding that this just includes Fairview itself. It does name Fairview in the bill.
What about the when the kid is transferred out of Fairview into a local state-operated or center or one that's operated pursuant to a contract?
Senator Hill, it's our understanding this would not apply, that those children would be take part of the regular local school district.
In the local school district. So we don't need to change.
This talks about state training centers, and they would not be considered any of the state, if there are any state-operated community facilities, they would be separate and apart from Fairview, but would be operated by the Mental Health Division Developmental Disabilities Program Office as a separate entity.
And if I may add, excuse me, those children, as they move into the community, would then be served by the local school district and become part of that local school program.
There's also mention, Mr. Chairman, of private hospitals. What is the role of the superintendent in regards to kids in private hospitals?
Currently, the Oregon Department of Education has a group of hospital programs that serve students that are under the age of 21, and that is a separate program, and this is transferring Fairview Training Center from a separate school district into that program,
into
and it would
that.
Be administered in the same way that the other hospital programs that serve children.
So it doesn't do anything new in regards to private hospitals?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the bill.
I got a question before you do.
All right. Final question.
Not of them, but okay. And I didn't read over all the technical parts of it, but does this then allow not only transference of funds, but of those assets that may be involved with the training of these children at Fairview, including, for instance, I know there are movable type teaching things over there that are used for these kids. You don't have any more use
let
for
let us
them.
Know what a movable type teaching thing is, too.
Teacher.
A teacher. No, I...
Can you want to respond to the question, is are there assets that are going to be moved as well?
If I may respond, I believe that if there are some materials and aids, supplementary aids that are used for children in their educational programs, oftentimes those materials are purchased solely for that.
Let me do this. I've been over there and I've seen substantial kinds of contraptions that are specially built for some of these kids that really are adaptable to very particular needs. And my question is, what's going to happen to those?
Representative Hanlon, at the children that are there now, all of the children who will be under the age of 21 by 1990, as those children move, their equipment will move with them. And so
okay.
For the school program,
including teaching equipment.
At anything, and that will go to the local school district, whatever, we move the equipment with them to the community.
Okay.
We have, before we move the bill, we have some amendments, so we need to have, Kay, if you want to run through the amendments with us.
Mr. Chairman, relating directly to this issue, we would propose that you put into this appropriation language that reduces the appropriation to the Mental Health Division by $60,000, and another section that would increase the appropriation for the Department of Education in that amount, and we will show on the budget report a deletion of 0.5 FTE positions at Fairview. In addition to that, and then, of course, an emergency clause would go on the bill along with that. The other issue that we would like to raise and have Karen Brazeau from the department is in the special education budget that has been planned all along, that $3.3 million will pick up county school fund billings, which have eroded to the point where only a few districts who haven't figured out how to avoid them will be billed. And in order to be fair and to reflect what to those districts and to reflect what we hope will pass in the above the cap bill, the $3.3 million, we're recommending that the county school fund billing for regional programs only, which this isn't